League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid.
Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. Broadcasting live from the mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios. Located at Senate Avenue Brewing Company in Jersey Village. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Senate Avenue Brewing. Lawrence and Ali taking pictures, signing autographs. It's wonderful that he came out to visit us here tonight. So, having a good time out here. We got another hour to go. It's going to be a sharp hour. We're going to talk college soccer. We're going to talk Houston Dynamo. We're going to go into a number of different things here before the night is over. Then we have Dave Pierce, formerly of the Carolina Lightning, who that was a team in the 80s that was brought back by Charlotte FC. And they did a really wonderful reunion for them, something that I think has been mirrored around Major League Soccer. But I'll tell you, it was pretty special. They did a special kit for them, everything. It was fantastic. I do want to get a little bit of, very quickly here, a reminder. Big shout out to Lone Star Sports and Entertainment for their support of this show. Also, I mentioned it before, T-shirts and hats, LamontBrands.com. Now, in Houston, Texas, we do have college programs, mainly women's programs, but we do have a men's program, and Ryan Pratt is joining us now. He is the head coach of Houston Christian University. Many of you will remember it. Am I allowed to say Houston Baptist University?
Yes, of course, yeah.
Okay. Used to be Houston Baptist University. I'm checking with Ryan to make sure it's okay. I don't want to be canceled. All right, so 2024, 8-7-5, very good year. Ryan has been there quite some time. A little bit on Ryan. He played at UAB under Mike Ettman.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, I know Mike. VCU assistant. You probably had some MLS players there during your time as well.
Jason Johnson was also a Dynamo player back in the day, so left VCU and went and signed with Dynamo.
Perfect. So, you know, this is a man who's got a pretty extensive coaching background, youth game, college game, and now has been at HCU for quite some time. So just let me give you a platform right now to talk about your program and just kind of where it's grown with you, where you want it to go, and, you know, makeup of the squad. I do know you have a lot of foreign players, but you also have a lot of Houston area kids.
We do, and that's been kind of our, I guess maybe the way we're trying to build things is to have everybody in the country knows how good Houston soccer is. From all the big programs, they come down. They try and take all the Houston-based players from us. We're trying to keep them all. And so we do our best to recruit Houston as well as we can, while at the same time trying to get our playmakers, if you will, impact-type players from overseas. Okay. And I've got an NIL deal for Lawrence if he'll stick around to maybe come and join our program in the fall as well. Maybe he'd do a double duty.
Well, you just led yourself into it because you knew I was going to ask you about the NIL. And we've had G. Guerrero on here from Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. The NIL, explain that in layman's terms to my audience, which I know is not, that's kind of like explaining Major League Soccer salary caps, but, you know, just maybe how it affects you now and how things are changing.
I'll just say it's a mess. NIL is an absolute mess. It doesn't really affect us too much at the Division I college soccer level, mid-major level, if you will. Some of the bigger programs, of course, it does. But from that to the house settlement to the 28 scholarships that now you can, if you opt in, you can now offer. We are not opting in. We opted out, so we're still stuck at the 9.9.
Well, that's a financial
number.
Thing,
it
right?
is. It's a financial thing. For small private schools, small institutions, where roster is a big builder of economic within the university, we have to make sure we keep that avenue of money coming in. And so limiting our roster to 28 is a death trap.
So am I wrong? And by the way, we're talking to Ryan Pratt, the head coach of HCU, Houston Christian University. Check out their games this year. They're just right off of 59 there. We used to practice, actually, yeah, in your locker rooms there back in the day. And we'd be in there, and then the Rockets would come in, and Olajuwon and all these guys would walk in, and then somebody would yell, hey, you soccer guys got to get out of here. But back to the NIL, I mean, is this really designed to help the Power Five, the you know, who's going to be spending money on college soccer? The Indianas, the
Marshall,
the UCLA's,
Marshall now is. So
crazy.
There are, you know, the bigger Power Five programs that are football oriented. Those soccer programs will still feel that NIL influx of money, and it will help them tremendously. And really, what it will do for us is what it's going to do for everybody is kind of separate the haves and the have-nots, and we'll see that kind of transpire over the next couple of years.
Oof, I don't know. It's a lot to wrap your arms around.
It's not a fun time if you're a have-not to be in the game and what you have and trying to keep up with the Indianas, the Marshalls, the Michigans, those kind of schools with.
So if a Texas A&M is going to have 28 scholarships, there's obviously going to be unhappy soccer players.
There are.
And then after 1 year, they're going to jump, right?
They are.
They're going to go
back
in the portal. So now you're going to get all of this, right?
Yep.
And then coaches don't have the power to really establish a relationship with a player. And the player doesn't have to honor a scholarship.
No, they don't. And, you know, it's funny because
it's really good business by the NCAA.
The NCAA model back in the day when you and I were playing was all about, you know, student-athlete experience and loyalty. And you had rules in place where if you did transfer, you had to sit out a year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now all the power, has gone to the player. And we don't have any recourse for us. There's no recourse whatsoever. Players can come. They can accept scholarships, and they can leave whenever they want. And so it's really a difficult time to be a college soccer coach.
So, Ryan, we're talking to Ryan Pratt, Houston Christian University men's coach. Okay, so is it possibly taking the enjoyment out of coaching? I know this is a tough question. I don't want to put you on the spot, but, boy, it's a lot of other things now to handle and be concerned about. And honestly, building a program and a team is a time element thing.
It is.
And that's got to really be tough on
you. You know, it's funny. Long gone are the days where you're going to have guys. I was talking with other coaching friends of mine where you're going to have guys that come in as freshmen and leave as seniors. That time is gone, mainly because of the 28, the house settlement. You know, now guys that come to mid-majors who we out-recruit in some ways, when they get to us, they play, they get experience, they develop, they're going to want to test the waters and see if they can get something, you know, more. Well, the grass isn't always greener, but we have that outflux, if you will, of players trying to maybe find something better. We try and do what we can to keep our guys, obviously, and development of those players is at the highest paramount of what we try and do.
Ryan Pratt, HCU men's coach. Has anybody floated the idea of maybe a national title for the Power Fives and maybe another one for the ones that aren't as financially well off the private end of it?
There's a lot of ideas been floating around. I have not heard that one yet, though. And I hope we don't do that. I think soccer...
Because that fragments it more.
I think so. I think soccer specifically, the parity in men's soccer is so good. It's so tight. Even the halves and... When they play the not so, you know, the teams that don't have as much, games are really competitive. And I don't think in soccer you're going to have as much separation as you would in American football or basketball or baseball.
I like your answer. I'm really glad you answered it that way because I just see a lot of things moving away from meritocracy in sports. It's about expansion. Yeah. It's about money. It's about commercialism. That's why when I get really depressed, I go back and watch the 66 World Cup. There's no sponsors. There's nothing on anybody's jerseys. And a bunch of people in suits watching the game. So that's what I do when I get depressed. All right, talk about some of your great players. Now, you do have a lot of players coming from a lot of different foreign countries. So take us into that a little deeper.
And we do have some guys from Dynamo Academy that have done fantastically well for us. D'Alessandro Herrera, who's a Dynamo Academy kid, is going to be a senior for us this year. Was a midfielder of the year in the conference in the OVC last year, 2 years ago, and been on the first team and second team each of his 2 years in the conference. Ryan Okorai, who is a Houston Dynamo kid as well, freshman of the year 2 years ago, first team each of his last 2 years. So we have done a really good job getting those Dynamo kids that want to stay home, staying home and come and play for us, and they've been very successful. And so that is one of the things that we're very proud of. We also have an Austin FC kid coming to us this coming year, Santiago Maynez. And so we're really trying to keep the Houston-based MLS Next type players home that can help us really develop and continue our success.
Do you have contact with Rangers, Josh Gardner, much?
You know, I do. I know people that know Josh Gardner. Yeah. I know Josh on a very limited basis, but he is doing a good job out there at Houston Rangers.
Yeah, by the way, HCU plays in the Ohio Valley Conference. Last year you guys were 5-2-3, an excellent record.
We finished. It's kind of weird. We're split into divisions. We were first in our division, made it all the way to the conference championship match, losing in double overtime. So we were 6.5 minutes away from being conference champions. Ahead 2-1 in the second half. Let it slip through our fingers, and then in overtime, in the second overtime in college soccer, you know, we had the 10-minute overtime period. So we had about 4 minutes left in the second overtime, and we gave up a goal on the corner kick. And so it was about as heartbreaking a way to lose as you could have.
But it was a good season overall. Ryan Pratt, he is the head coach of Houston Christian University. As far as your rivals, who would be your big rival? Because I know everybody's jumping conferences all the
everybody's
time.
Everybody's jumping conferences. The great thing
I can't keep track of it.
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but in Houston, but in Texas, there's only four Division I soccer programs. SMU, right. Who's we play them in preseason in the spring, and they're really tight games every time. UIW in San Antonio is probably our biggest rival.
Incarnate Word
out of San Antonio. We play them twice a year. Our conference is home and away. And so we're almost too familiar with them, in a way. They're our biggest
familiarity
rival.
Familiarity breeds a little contempt there.
Yeah, we don't like those guys, and I don't like us very much.
That's good, though. As long as it's in a healthy way. What about, do you ever play Trinity, or do you stay away from Division III?
We don't stay away from them. We just don't play them in the fall. In the spring, if we could, we would. But in the spring, it's a great time for us because we have relationships with the Dynamo. We play the Dynamo II. We play Austin FC II. We play FC Dallas II. North Texas Soccer Club, we play those guys, and so we in the spring we get to play these pro teams that we have in our backyard, so it's a great experience for us.
And you're looking at players too while it's going on.
Exactly.
It's a wonderful thing.
It is.
So that's a great relationship you have with the Houston Dynamo.
It's fantastic. Yeah. We're very happy to have it and very proud.
Now, is that something when you're talking to guys and recruiting, it's nice to be in an MLS city, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, when we're not.
And I'll take it even further with all the international soccer that comes in. This is a soccer city.
We get to offer to our guys that relationship where we send players into these clubs in the summer and have them train with their two program. And so for those guys that are overseas that we have come over, that is a big selling point for us in the recruiting process. It's a massive point that we get across to them.
Talk about that and why so many more foreign players are coming over, although there were a lot of foreign players in our day, but it seems like it's more to me now.
I think for them, you know, the U.S. setup is different, obviously, in the fact that if you haven't made it as a pro in overseas at 16 or 17, you probably aren't going to make it. Over here in the States, most of the pros come after college, so you're 22, 23 years old. And so they get a five-year extension on their pro clock, if you will, so they can come over here and do well in college. They can extend their career and hopefully find a way to gain a professional contract.
Now you got USL 1 and 2. You got MLS.
Now you got a lot of opportunity going in. So, yeah.
What percentage do you think of the foreign player that's coming to your program is coming over here with the ambition of being a pro?
I think all of them want it. I think all of them want it.
Wow.
At least those are the guys that we're trying to recruit that helps our program get to where we have been the last year, where we want to go in the future. If you don't have those guys that don't have the ambition of being a pro, then you're only going to be able to take your program so far.
So, Ryan, are you? What's your game model, your style of play? I'm using game model, but style of play is what I used to say. I don't know where I guess that got banished from the Webster's Dictionary. I don't know. But what's your game model?
We're a possession-based team. We really value the ball. We build out of the back. We defend in a 4-4-2 in flat lines. In possession, we morph into like a 3-5-2 or a 3-6-1, depending on it. Sometimes it's almost like a 2-4-4 in a ways. We take our right fullback and push him forward and take our right winger or midfielder and push him inside and create a box with a forward coming down. And so over the last several years, we've been tweaking things that we've been doing and learning even as we go, and developing our shift from a 4-3-3 for the most part to a 3-5-2 to now a 4-4-2, and how we then attack and build out of that. And so it's a really possession-based type style. Fans will love to come watch us play because we do value the ball. You know, not to throw stats at you, but we played 20 games last year, and we outpossessed 15 of those 20 games. And so we had 75% of the time we had more possession of the ball than our opponent did.
Big value on the ball.
Which is a big difference.
So when you recruit, I mean, you want technical players, obviously.
We do. We show our video to guys when we recruit them. They're like, yeah, I like the way you play. And that's how we get some guys to come across. The way we play, the style we play, is the new modern way to play. We implement those concepts and hopefully prepare those guys for life as a pro.
How much data do you use? You know, because that's a thing now. And I mean, it's maybe too much of a thing sometimes.
Yeah, it is.
But how much data? How do you use data along with the eye test?
You know, Glenn, I'm old like you. maybe a little bit younger, but
I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but I am old.
I'll tell you if you stick around.
I think I'm older than you.
I don't put a lot. I look at the data. I have a young assistant coach who loves that stuff.
Yeah.
And so I lean on him a lot in those areas. But we have data for how many sprints you run, how far you ran in the game, what your top speed was, how many axels and decels you have. I mean, there's just data for days on our guys and what you can have. What we do is we take the data. We take all of those metrics, if you will, pick the top 8 or 10, and we try and take those and figure out what our guys' load is, what they need to do for training the next day after the game, how we prepare for the next game as well. So we take that data and just try and tweak our training around what we see.
You know, I was listening to Robbie Keane, the former guy, former LA Galaxy player, great player.
Yeah.
He was on a podcast, and he told this really weird story about Landon Donovan, how he would come in the locker room and see if his name was at the top of the chart for running the most.
Yep.
Which we all know that doesn't mean you're the most effective.
No, it does not.
But I just thought it was kind of bizarre.
But it's very motivating, and we do the same thing. We print out guys' top speed, guys' miles covered in the games. We put in the locker room, and they want to go see where they were. And it is a way for us to motivate in a different, maybe, capacity or different way than maybe we thought about a couple years ago without having the data.
But isn't that a worry if a player goes on the field and he's thinking about, well, I want to be number one on the list that's pinned in the locker room, so I'm going to run my tail off even when I shouldn't be running. Like, there's times you shouldn't be running.
There's certainly a double-edged sword, if you will, in some ways.
It's interesting.
But it is the data is the data, and sometimes they look at it, I want to be first in this one and that one, and so.
Talking to Ryan Pratt of Houston Christian University, what's your favorite data pieces outside of possession? What might be
so
one or two of your favorites that you think are important based on your team?
One of the ones that is important for us is passes per recovery. So when we lose possession, how quick does the opponent, how many passes do they have before we retain or recover the ball again? For us, when we have as much possession as we do, and hopefully in the final third, we're going to try things. We're going to have turnovers. And so we want to make sure that we're in positions to repress and gain the ball back as quick as possible.
Ryan, do me a favor. Give out your information where people can learn about your program. I'm sure there's a lot of youth players that may not even know and would love to know.
Yeah.
Go for it.
HCUHuskies.com, and just go to the athletics page there. Click on men's soccer. Our schedule for the fall is up there already. You can look at all of our incoming players, all of our current players. You can see where they're from. Come watch us. Come have fun. All of our games are free admission, so you don't cost anything. Come bring the family and watch a good brand of soccer.
When's preseason start?
13 days away.
13 days away. Best of luck. It's an exciting time going into a season.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Always. All right, that's Ryan Pratt. Let's give him a round of applause. HCU men's coach in the house. We appreciate you making it all the way out here, Ryan. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we'll take a break. Nico's Greek and American Cafe for the best in Greek food.
ESPN 97.5. This is Soccer Matters
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Senate Avenue Brewing Company in Jersey Village. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, the best in vinyl and CDs, Cactus Music. Our good friend Quinn down there, Cactus Music's got the pre-owned, and it's also got all the reissues, and I'm sure Black Sabbath stuff is going to be flying off the shelves here. Welcome back, Senate Avenue Brewing. Let me just get you into a couple of things real quick. Kaylor Navas, Newell's Old Boys, back to Unam Pumas. That's one that's broken lately. I mentioned England 2-1 in the Euros over Italy. Italy had that one almost. Haji Mang in the 90+6, 19-year-old, scored. Chloe Kelly, the big German fans. Tomorrow it's Germany and Spain. And then the winners of Germany and Spain will play against England in the European Women's Championship Final on Sunday. Welcome back, everybody. Again, a big shout-out to LamontBrands.com. Soccer Matters T-shirts and hats, that's where you get them. Okay, Houston Dynamo come off a 1-1 win against the Philadelphia, 1-1 draw against the Philadelphia Union. LA Galaxy up next. I'm going to give some tickets away here shortly, which I forgot to do. Galaxy have only 16 points. We remember they won the MLS Cup last year. Ricky Pooch has been out the entire year. They come off a 3-3 draw with LAFC. Late goal from Maya Yoshida. This is a tricky game with Gabriel Peck and James Pantsil coming in. The Dynamo are in 11th place, 7-6-11, 2 points out of the playoffs. So the 1-1 draw with Philly, I bring in Fernando De Michelis. He's a correspondent with Soccer Matters. The 1-1 draw with the Union, I hear people, oh, it's a good point. And I'm like, no, it's not a good point. It's a lost 2 points. We're running out of time here. I was a little confused with that. There's things to be happy about in the game. There's nothing to be happy about not taking the full 3 points.
I was surprised as well. I heard a lot of optimism after the game, and I really couldn't understand why, especially knowing Philadelphia came with a lot of subs as well. You know, no one was really talking about that either. Surprising, I think, the fan base in general, the reaction.
Well, we're going to play some of the sound that you got. The Philadelphia Union made 7 changes going into that game, including the number 4 goal scorer in the league, Ty Baribo. He didn't come in until the second half. But the one thing I was really impressed about Philadelphia was, oh, you're thinking, okay, they're starting a 19-year-old goalkeeper, 19-year-old outside back. But the thing that I was really impressed with, and I said this on the Apple broadcast, was that they didn't play any differently with the different personnel. These guys know this system. They are well-drilled. They know exactly how they want to play. And honestly, I was having a discussion with somebody in the TV booth before, and you were there with me doing the data. But, you know, this is a Union team that's looking at the big picture. Doesn't mean because they're making 7 changes, they're disrespecting anybody. They're looking at the big picture, and they got confidence in young players.
Yeah. I mean, what is concerning, or not concerning, but something to do notice is that it's not the first time that teams come to Houston with a lot of subs. There is something about, I remember Minnesota, that game, for example, where Ortiz and Andrade had their break. That being said, yeah, Philadelphia, it's a very compact team. Everybody knows what they're playing. And they have experience, and they have young players at the same time. You know, it's not a coincidence that Bedoya is the one that scored, regardless of the play. Having players like that in the team for so long as well. I think he's been there for almost 10 years now.
38 years old, he got the start, he got the gift as well. That was a self-inflicted play because Pablo Ortiz should have headed that. Yeah. I mean, there's no question. I don't understand that there's delivery from wide and a center back is not attacking it, but it might have just been a momentary lapse. And then, you know, I heard people bagging on Dorsey. There's nothing Dorsey can do about that because that ball should never even get through there.
When you see the first 10, 15 minutes against Vancouver, the same place happens over and over again. They attack us always on the right side, always that cross ball, and Ortiz in both games just wasn't able to get those balls out. You know, he's really struggling right now.
All right, you got some great sound after the game. Let's pull the sound. Now, this is the Dynamo fan base after the 1-1 draw with the Philadelphia Union.
What do you think of the game tonight? It was a battle, tough battle. You know, we got lucky with that penalty. We had chances to equalize. You know, we attacked, but we can't finish. As long as we don't, it's going to be the same outcome every time.
What do you think of the team tonight?
We were surprised. I think they gave a great effort, considering we're coming off a disappointing effort last week. I'm happy with the result.
Player in this team that you feel particularly identifies the Dynamo?
Dorsey, the hustle, the time he spends with the fans, the commitment he has for the team, some of those things.
What do you think of the team tonight?
Overall, I feel like 7 out of 10, we did good. Hopefully we can do better the next game.
What do you think about the game?
The game was really good. It was really intense. Dynamo was making a lot of crosses, but they just couldn't finish a lot.
Who's your favorite player in the team?
Dorsey.
What do you think about the game tonight?
We fought hard. We have the talent, but we're not executing. My unbiased opinion is that Pat Onstad has put too much into certain players that he imported and not focused on homegrown talent. Now, my problem with the MLS is that we don't have a promotion and relegation. So it gives nobody any incentive to actually play their hardest other than money.
What do you think about the game tonight?
Great job. We came in hard, played tough. I mean, they're the better team, and we matched them with effort tonight.
Do you think we're going to make the playoffs?
I sure hope so.
What do you think about the game tonight?
The game was decent. He should have not started the people that started.
Do you think we're going to make the playoffs?
We probably won't.
Okay, so that was a great job by you, first of all, Fernando. Federico. Jeez. So, listen, me and Federico have a running joke here because there was a guy in the New York Cosmos who I know named Fernando Di Matteis, an Italian guy. He played for the New York Cosmos. So I have constantly called you Fernando. Federico is actually a professional opera singer as well. But that was really, really good stuff. So what I heard was can't finish. I mean, I think we all know that. Mm-hmm. Happy about the result, 7 out of 10. A lot of Dorsey fans. The little kid I love, even he said we can't finish.
Yeah.
We fought. We got a promotion relegation in there. Mm-hmm. We got great job as well. So what is your overall take from this? And I mean, I really love seeing and hearing the fans speak out. So I think this is a good segment.
Yeah, like we were talking about this, I'm a little surprised about the general optimism. I think what people see in this team, and I agree with them in that point, is the effort. I think there is effort. I think the players are there to win.
Now, flip side, let's go back to one game before this Union game.
That's a different
story.
There
wasn't an effort in the first 15, 20 minutes. You lost the game there,
yeah.
And you were asleep at the wheel. So I don't know how anybody didn't think Vancouver was going to come in baring their teeth and pressing and trying to get off to a good start, because I think that's a given. I think everybody in MLS, they say, it's 90-something degrees, we got to get the game's first goal. This is a team that's only had 7 or 8 multi-goal games,
yeah.
Right? Let's make them play from behind because we're not convinced they can score goals. And by the way, we only got a goal off a penalty against Philadelphia.
Yeah, and if you think about it, the only threat that we have right now, you know, despite, you know, having Lawrence, and we saw him right here, we know the danger that he means for the opposition. But right now, as things are planned for the Dynamo, as long as you shut down the right side of the attack with Dorsey and with McGlynn, that's it. That's all you have to worry about. There's nothing else. Nothing else is happening right now.
So let's think of a couple things here. First of all, our expectations have to be tempered with the attacking players, because if we really dig into their history, and I hope people hear this, none of them have a history of scoring a lot of goals,
yeah.
Okay? None of them. Ponce did not score in Spain. Ponce did not score in Russia. Ponce did score in Greece 1 every 2 games. Now, system is something that you have to weigh in there. I know we know he's a good soccer player, but he is your DP. You got to get more San Diego's out of him. He's got to win you 4 or 5 games simply because he produces something special. But to ask Amin Bassi, Kowalczyk to be big goal scorers, I think it's unfair to those players. And they're all excellent, good soccer players.
Yeah.
But they're not game winners. So that's the first thing I think you have to look at. It is a struggle to score goals. We're statistically down 29 out of 30, I think, before the Vancouver game in percentage of shots on goal. So, I mean, it's all reflected there. If you want to do the data, You don't really need to. You see the eye test. Now, they were unlucky against Philly because you hit a post, you hit a crossbar. But my point is, if you have goal scorers who have a proven history, some of those are going to go in. You will have more points right now.
Yeah. And they are isolated actions, too. You know, one thing that I'm very curious to see is how... Okay, so I'm going to break this one down in two. So after Ponce's injury, the way that the team stood on the field was worrisome to me. I had no idea of what to do. You know, so it makes you wonder. You know?
Without him, you
without
mean?
Him, yeah, without
because
him.
He's been such a focal point.
Completely. Yeah. So you know what he did? He put Linger and Holmes, I believe, very wide open. And then
Ben Olsen.
Right. Yeah. Then he grabbed Kovacic and put him a little bit behind them as some sort of false nine
and
then Siegel came in. So
Gabe Siegel.
Right. So what I wonder is, you know, is he going to stick to his style of play now without Ponce and Escobar, which I haven't heard from the club. I don't know how bad those injuries are.
I have to believe those guys are not going to be available this weekend.
They look horrible.
I would say, you know, we'll see. They did not look like good injuries. Ponce was grabbing his hamstring, and Escobar looked like his ankle, but I don't want to play doctor here either.
No. But so what do you do? You know, do you play Seagal and you continue with that format of soccer, or do you actually try something different now?
I don't think they're going to pull off the...
Absolutely
I don't think
not.
Ben Olsen's going to pull off
Absolutely
the
not.
System. Look, there's another real big pink elephant in the room. It's not as good a possession team as it once was.
That's fair.
Okay, and we have to understand how good Hector Herrera was, what an orchestrator, what a leader he is. We have a great young guy replacing him now who's very fun to watch and has got a bright future, Jack McGlynn. You got Coco, maybe it's Linger who's replaced him, started off with the bang. We got Mikael now, his position being taken by Pablo Ortiz. And I would only, I'd say the only push is Jonathan Bond for Steve Clark. I think Bond has played quite well. Last thought goes to you, Federico, in this segment.
We have to win on Friday. We have to. We must. There is no way around it, and that's the last thing I'm going to say. We have to win.
All right. So on behalf of a segment on the Houston Dynamo, as we go to break here, caller number four at 713-780-3776. Caller number four, 713-780-3776. You get a pair of tickets to the Houston Dynamo Friday. They take on the LA Galaxy, who come in with some big-time wingers in Gabriel Peck and Paintsill. So that's a big one. Take a break. We'll come back. Dave Pierce, Carolina Lightning, Charlotte FC. That's what's up next.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is Soccer Matters
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com, broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Senate Avenue Brewing Company in Jersey Village. Here's Glenn Davis.
The beautiful Senate Avenue Brewery, it's a great place to be. The best, freshest home-brewed beer. Small batch brewery and kitchen open 7 days of the week for lunch and dinner. Really appreciate being hosted out here by Andrew Mitchum and Company. Destination 2026 tomorrow night, my other show, 6 o'clock. Houston's countdown to the Cup. The special guest will be former U.S. Women's National Team center back Becky Sauerbrunn. We've got Posey Parker, who is a Houstonian, wrote a book called Pickles in the Stolen World Cup. It's about the Jules Rimet World Cup trophy that was stolen. You can get that book at Amazon.com. So saw Posey last night, wanted to give her a shout-out for a great book, Pickles in the Stolen World Cup. A dog found the trophy. That's a little tip-off. And Monday Night Football, we'll be doing again in August. Be ready for that. Right now, caller number three at 713-780-3776. You get a pair of tickets to the Dynamo LA Galaxy. Next interview, Dave Pierce is a former teammate of mine, also played for the Carolina Lightning. This is back in the 80s. Charlotte FC just did a really good promotion, bringing back his team when he was on Carolina, and they did a special Adidas jersey and hat that reflected the history of the former pro team. Here's Dave Pierce. Well, Dave, thanks for joining us. We got a big crowd out here at Senate Avenue Brewing, so we wanted to do a little bit of a flashback here. And as mentioned, Dave, a former professional soccer player in the 80s. He was a member of the Carolina Lightning Championship team in ASL in 1981. So first thing is, I see, you know, I'm talking with you. I see this beautiful Charlotte FC honoring of this 81 championship team, the Carolina Lightning. I think I played against you guys in 83. But, man, I just was like, what a great gesture from this organization. And I saw a lot of familiar faces there, Dave.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, Glenn. Good to be with you tonight. But it's rare that you get this many guys that keep coming back. We had a 30-year reunion, a 40-year reunion. We've been to each other's inductions into the North Carolina Soccer Hall, et cetera. So it's really a great group of guys, and we've stayed, you know, pretty much in touch with each other for over 40 years now. And having the MLS team honor us last Wednesday when they played DC United with the Heritage jersey that they wore, and they're going to wear it for another home game and then I think an away game, was pretty special.
Tell us a little bit about the jersey, because it alludes to the Carolina Lightning. They also gave you hats. This is a wonderful gesture from this organization and a very smart gesture.
Yeah, absolutely. They decided to honor us in that way, and the jersey is very similar to the ones we had, the same color schematic, because if you notice that Charlotte FC tends to wear the same colors that the Panthers have, that black and teal. So this was really a pretty big departure from their norm.
David Pierce joining us here, played in the indoor league as well with Wichita, also played with the Carolina Lightning, also the Rochester Flash. I'm sure I'm missing one or two more. Excellent player, very quick, mobile. I know you as an attacking player. That's what I remember you as. And we had a little bit of a stint together briefly, at least briefly for me, in Columbus, Ohio, indoors. Connection to the past. How important is that, do you think, for Major League Soccer teams, knowing sort of what has come before them in each individual market?
Yeah, well, that was one of the themes that they, you know, throughout the time we were there, was in the players were very well aware of it. Ownership, the people that worked all the way down, Dean Smith, the coach of Charlotte, was aware of the heritage that was there. So it really was pretty special to be there. And I'll tell you one thing that I really noticed. They had us at the team shop at 10 o'clock when it opened, and they brought us in from the stadium side. And when they opened the door, there was this rush of people, and I stuck my head out and I couldn't believe the line I saw. It must have been I'm not exaggerating, a mile long. We were there for 2.5 hours, mingled with the people that came in, the fans. They were pulling jerseys three at a time. They had three in each hand and they were checking out, and these jerseys weren't cheap. They're anywhere from $110 to $159 if you got the authentic MLS jersey versus the replica. And we were signing stuff. So it was really, I know it made all the players feel good, because, you know, you're 40 years removed from this stuff. And it was just, it just brought back that time for us, and brought back the locker room. It brought back all the great memories we had. And teams are smart to do that. You know, I know Manchester United has ambassadors, and all the ex-players are always welcome there. They gave them blazers to wear. They, you know, they interact with the fans. So it's really a smart play for an MLS team to do something like that, especially when there was a team there prior to them.
Yeah, excellent move. And I'm assuming that there were fans who saw you play all the way back in the 80s showing up there.
You know what? It was funny. We had some people in their 40s and 50s that said, "Hey, I watched you play when I was a kid."
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's wild.
It's pretty wild. That happens to me at the stadium on occasion, and I almost fall over when it happens. But it is, and they're still season ticket holders from, you know, 1984 Houston Dynamos that I still bump into at the stadium, and it's pretty cool. All right, so let's talk about Memorial Stadium. I always like coming there to play. I thought that was a really cool environment in Charlotte, obviously before Major League Soccer. This was in the 80s. How much did you like playing there? Because it was a really condensed, nice, tight environment, very intimate.
Yeah, it was great to play there. You know, it's your perfect. Maybe it's a little bit small for an MLS venue, but I mean, we had 21,000 there for the championship game. And then we had crowds of 15,000, 8,000. I can't remember what we averaged over the 3 years, but it was close to 6,000. So we had a good base there, and it was really an intimate. It was a stone, you know, the walls around were stone.
The exterior, right?
This was built in 1934, Glenn. It's a historic site. And so the fans were kind of right there on the field. It was really I would have liked to had a little wider of a field, but all in all, it was and they kept it in excellent condition. The grass was like a putting green.
Grass was always great there. Yeah, I remember that. Awesome. I also remember, Dave, walking out there to look at the field, you know, before the game, once we got off our shuttled vans. And I was walking with a guy named Peter Carr, who played on New England. You remember him, I'm sure, a defender. And I remember some fan hanging over the tunnel or the area we walked in. And this team that I was on then, you remember the Pennsylvania Stoners. And some fan yelled over and said, "Hey, guys, you got a Duber?" You know, alluding to the fact that we were, I mean, yeah, we took a little abuse with that name for sure. But Rodney Marsh was your coach, very famous player in England. You know, obviously that must have been pretty interesting. And you had Bobby Moore there as an assistant coach as well. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's so funny. Glenn, I'll tell you, I graduated college, local college out there, Belmont Abbey, which is right outside of Charlotte. The little unknown fact, myself, Tony, if you remember Matt Kennedy, the goalkeeper, he went there. We had another guy, Frank Lawson, who played. I think he signed for Nashville and played there. We had Greg Heilemann, who ended up going with George Kennedy from Belmont to Wake Forest to finish his career. He played on the team. So we had a pretty good local flavor. And so when I graduated, the team wasn't coming for another year. And I just made a commitment that I was going to make that team. And Eddie Young, the general manager, got me a job bartending. So I bartended for that whole 1980. And I trained during the day and I worked at night. And Rodney had just filmed that Miller Lite commercial. So he was all over the TV. So he was a bona fide star. And then when he came to Charlotte, I just remember I was bartending in this place and he came in for a drink with Ed Young and I was starstruck. And then, you know, just a few months later, I signed for him. And then the third year when Bobby Moore came, that was just icing on the cake. And he played 7 or 8 games.
He played the night we came there. I remember he got activated because you had so many injuries.
Yeah.
And I think we were all just like, you know, kind of stunned. Number one, he was out there. I think he was 42 years old, but you know, we all knew this was a guy who lifted the 1966 World Cup for England. I mean, you know, it would have been something just to see him without him actually being on the field. So for us to say at our age that we played against Bobby Moore or with or against him is pretty funny.
Yeah, we can say that.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe people won't believe us. Talking to Dave Pierce, Carolina Lightning, they were just honored by Charlotte FC. Wonderful, wonderful reunion. I look in that picture and I even see guys back to my youth days in New Jersey, like Jerry McEwen, who has now gotten into coaching. I saw Kevin Murphy there, who was from Trenton. I played on a state team with those two guys. It was a different type of person back then that, you know, I just heard you tell a story of being a bartender trying to make this team. You really had to have a deep want and desire. It just seems a little different.
Oh, wow. I can't tell you that book, Malcolm Gladwell, the 10,000 hours. I mean, I put 10,000 hours, I'm telling you. I mean, I had an apartment complex. Actually, I bought a condo. And I was actually, we had 2 racquetball courts in that condo complex in the clubhouse. And I can't tell you how many rainy days I was in that with those, you know, the fuzzy soccer balls, knocking it against and, you know, 1-2-ing off the walls and just busting my butt and then also training. I was fortunate that we had a really good local amateur soccer team that Tony Suarez and I played on. And we won the North Carolina state championships. Actually, Ed Young was our goaltender. So I had a good group. There was a lot of good players that were in the Charlotte area. So there was a lot of good competition to keep you sharp. So that was helpful as well.
Good to hear you mention Tony Suarez, because we reconnected before this interview with his sister, Anna, who I had run into and gotten to meet up in ESPN back calling a World Cup a long, long time ago. So that's nice. But, you know, self-starter is the word I would say. I mean, a lot of these guys were, you know, your story is similar to so many of the guys who were playing back then. You know, we all had our introduction to the game, fell in love with it, and then, you know, we didn't want it to stop, right? So we were going to do whatever it took.
Yeah, it's a real story of just perseverance. And, you know, some of the guys like, you know, Kevin Murphy got drafted right out of high school. You know, and then we had Santi Formoso from the Cosmos and Huey O'Neill, who played in the NASL. So we had and Curtis Leeper. And Curtis, it's funny because when Kevin was in Philadelphia and Curtis was in Fort Lauderdale, they got traded for each other. Curtis went to Philly and Kevin went to Fort Lauderdale. So Kevin was, you know, 18 years old playing with the likes of George Best. You know, it had to be a great experience.
You know, it's funny. I remember all those names because we go to the Cosmos games, and then when we see like our peers get drafted, one or two guys, then we see the lone American or two on the field. That was a huge, huge, you know, piece of incentive, I think. For all of us, right?
Yeah. Well, it's just weird. It's weird tailgating a giant stadium, you know, and then a couple of years playing with or against these guys. It was kind of cool. I mean, I played in a game of Fort Lauderdale. If you remember in the USL, there were just four teams. It was Dallas, Fort Lauderdale, Juarez, Mexico, and Oklahoma City. And we go down there to play Fort Lauderdale. And on the field, Johan Naiskins, Teofilo Cubillas, Thomas Rongen. I mean, it was Keith Weller. I mean, it was beyond. It was surreal.
Funny story. I was in Houston getting a regular paycheck. We had gotten to the final the year before against Lauderdale, and Keith wanted me, came to the Dynamo organization and said, well, you know, we want to make an offer for Glenn. And the Dynamo came to me and said, listen, we want to let you know. It's up to you. And I knew Neeskens was going to be there, right, and everything going on. But I also knew, and people warned me, that it was not on good financial standing. So what happened was I decided to remain stable in Houston. That league folded, and we played a bunch of exhibition games, maybe 10 or 11, just to keep it alive. But, it was always like, yeah, wouldn't that have been something to be around Neeskens?
Yeah.
And some of those other guys. But then Keith Weller and a bunch of the Lauderdale guys ended up coming to Houston. Mark Schwartz,
that's
Keith
right.
Weller, Todd Saldana, And Thomas Rongen. Yeah. So it wasn't an easy times back then. That's for sure. Looking at the league now, comparatively to the times we were playing in high school stadiums and in NFL stadiums, the infrastructure, just all the change, what goes through the mind of Dave Pierce?
Well, it's funny. I when I did this, they wanted to do, and Adidas did this ad with the Heritage kit. And so I was at Charlotte FC's facility to do the photo shoot with Wilfried Zaha and Pep Biel. And
I saw the picture, by the way. It was great.
Yeah, they did a nice job. But the funny thing was, Glenn, I was just overwhelmed. I mean, I had to go through security. You know, there was like all these people running around. I mean, the fields were, there were not one field. There weren't two fields. There were like eight fields. There was, you know, separate parking, high security for the players, and then the front entrance for everybody else. You know, I don't know, seemed like 30 or 40 monitors in the office. You know, it's just all open area with cubicles and people buzzing around. I think they told me they had a dozen people that all they do is social media. That's their job. their academy is in there. I mean, it was like a NFL, EPL, you name it. It was a first class operation. It was impressive.
Dave, listen, time is up, but listen, we'll get you back on again. This has been a lot of fun. Number one, just catching up with you after all these years, but also to see it in a situation where I saw all those guys on the field with you who were former Carolina Lightning players. It just looked wonderful. So congratulations, and I'm glad you enjoyed that weekend. You are what they call a pioneer, my friend.
That's right. That's right. The original Daniel Boone of soccer, right?
There you go. Dave, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
My pleasure, Glenn. Good talking to you.
All right, that does it tonight from Senate Avenue Brewing. A big thank you to having them host us here, our once-a-month show. Sean Makes back in studio, Brian McDonald on site, Dynamo Lawrence and Nolly for coming in here tonight, Jack Holmes, Dynamo PR man, Federico DeMichelis, correspondent for Soccer Matters and opera singer extraordinaire, and former teammate Dave Pierce from the Carolina Lightning. Big thank you, everybody, for coming out. Wonderful night here. We look forward to our next visit to Senate Avenue Brewing in Jersey Village.
ESPN 97.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.